I am 53. The 29th of April, 2006 to the 28th of April, 2007. Above. Who the fuck are you? By Hugh Weldon. In 45, I wrote the following. We scaled the walls of the National Theatre with pots of emulsion, long-ranged paint rollers, and a journalist from Time Out in tow. 10 years earlier, we'd followed the same route to daub the beckoning acres of virgin grey concrete wall with our opening salvo. 1987. What the fuck's going on? This time, 1997. What the fuck's going on? Some things changed, some things don't, and 2007 is not that far away. Well, reader, as it turned out, by 2007, I had lost interest in redaubing the walls of the National Theatre. Though the question, what the fuck is going on, remained as pertinent as ever. That question is answered in some detail in over the course of 400 pages in the book 17. However, since that book relates largely to my activities around external projects in the real world, it may interest the reader to have some idea of what was going on in the deeper recesses of my psyche throughout that period. I have therefore selected a couple of key entries from my hitherto unpublished dream diary. The kidnapping of Bill Drummond, or You Can't Gay Him Anymore. 17th of June, 2006. I've been kidnapped. On the way home from a day in Huddersfield for a choir rehearsal, or at least such I imagine to be the case. The details of the actual kidnapping are vague. Scraps of memory indicate an altercation in the car park at the Hilton Park services, a brief struggle, and the door of a black van being slammed on me. The actual kidnapping does not appear to be significant in itself. My assailants remain entirely invisible figures, mere muffled voices on a dark night. Their intention seems mainly to have been to take me somewhere and face something. I find myself in a dark, musty-smelling building. Half-light, dawn, I assume, from the sound of the birds outside. I awake in some discomfort, lying on a hard floor, dressed only in a blanket of rough material which chafes against my skin. I appear to be in a large space, cluttered with various objects. Immediately in front of me is a large penny-farthing bicycle. I am the prisoner. I don't want to be the prisoner. I get up and I begin to explore. This appears to be some sort of museum, but a rather amateur and disorganised one. The windows give me a clue. Church windows, obviously. St. John's United Free Church, Newton's Church. My dad was the minister here. I've been kidnapped and taken home. I have to escape. Pulling the blanket around me, it had been patched in various places, making me think of Eccles in the Telegoons. I make my way cautiously towards what appears to be the doorway. My bare feet on the cold floor are freezing. Just then, I hear the sound of a key being turned and the door starts to open. I suppress the instinct to hide somewhere. I need to escape after all. An elderly lady enters. On seeing me, she screams. I try to tell her, it's okay, it's okay. I've been kidnapped. I need to get out. I need to get home, but all that comes out of my mouth is, I'm Bill. Bill, you know Bill. I rush past, through the door, and down the short path to York Road. I know where I am. But at the same time, I know no one here these days. I head down to Victoria Street and find myself outside the picture house. It's closed. There's nobody about. Everything is closed. Everything is cold. I hear myself shouting again in case anyone can hear me. I'm Bill. Bill, you know me. Bill. On the terraces, the 23rd of October, 2006. A dream in which I am surrounded by hostility on all sides. A mostly hostility. It begins with a hubbub. Saturday lunchtime in the Grapes Matthew Street around 1977, packed with the usual faces. Gary Dwyer seems to be holding up the doorway. Bob Wooler comes in and makes a call on the payphone. I'm looking forward to it calming down around 1:30 when the football lot leaves and I can maybe get a seat. A shout from somewhere, insistent, urgent, "Minibus is here!" And the whole pub, it seems, is making for the door. I, along with them, to get into this dirty white minibus parked outside in Matthew Street. We all seem to fit in, which would be impossible in reality. But this is the way things work in dreams. P. Wiley is driving. I know for a fact he can't drive. But he seems to be in control, living his Neil Cassidy fantasies. I am angry at having to leave my pint of Higson's behind, and angrier still when it appears we're heading for Anfield. I don't want to go to the match. Much as I love football, the local teams have never figured in my loyalties or my interests. Even the prospect of seeing Kenny Dalglish in a red shirt for the first time fails to whet my appetite. In the stadium, at the Anfield end, the away end, in that section at the corner reserved for away supporters. And I am the only one there. A team in blue run onto the pitch. Not Everton, as you might imagine, but Queen of the South, my own team. As their single sole supporter, in the otherwise empty section of terracing, I begin to start shouting and yelling and clapping for all my worth. I am lunatic, ecstatic, deranged. If I am the only Dunhamer who has made it to Anfield, I am sure as hell going to show everyone I am here. Fortunately, I have been gifted a full head-to-toe super supporter kit in the team colours and a large flag, so notice will be taken. I dash to the front of the terrace, wave my flag, and as the crowds hush, I hear myself declaiming in a voice at the same time both my own and something entirely strange and alien, deep and resounding, with an authority vouchsafed from another plane. The Queen of the South will rise up at the judgment with this generation and condemn it, for she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and behold, something greater than Solomon is here. And from the cop comes a chant in reply, that contemptuous, condescending put-down reserved for any away support foolhardy enough to challenge their God-given superiority. Who the fuck? Who the fuck? Who the fucking hell are you?
Below, Grey Was Always Going to Win by Shug Lagunas. The darkness is total and engulfing. There's no up or down, no left or right, no forward or back. Time is frozen and endless at the same time. Yet I am aware. In my mind, I appear to be lying underwater in the black loch of the Galloway Hills. But that doesn't make sense, for if I were underwater, then I would surely be dead. Slowly, the blackness begins to lift. It creeps and grows and filters into numerous lighter shades, heading towards the growing light. Maybe I've died and my ashes are tumbling amongst the rocks of the Penkiln Burn? But I don't reach the light. Instead, I stop at Purgatory Central. The Grey. I seem to be lying on my back, but not touching any bed or chair. I'm floating, yet somehow being held in place by invisible hands. The grey is perfect and absolute. It looks like a thick fog, but slightly sharp in texture and crackling and buzzing, as if electrified. I wait for an eternity or a second, and then I start to hear other sounds. They start out vague, but quickly start to clump together, congealing into sounds I recognize. As well as the sounds, I start to see changes in the grey around me. Vague outlines like faces appear and disappear, except they are different. They are alien faces, resembling what the Area 51 nuts would call the Greys. The noise around me grows steadily. It sounds like the diesel engine of my Land Rover. Thrum, thrum, thrum. I can hear the wind whistling through my wing mirror. Pwee-wee! The noises start to recede until all I can hear is the humming of the electric fog once more. The faces fade out of view and there is a dull click nearby. The aliens start a beautiful chattering amongst themselves in a high, sing-songy language, almost musical. It takes me a while to realize that the sound that I'm hearing isn't coming through my ears anymore, but straight into my head. I can understand them. I can hear the combined chatter of the melody or adjust my perception slightly to focus on an individual. There are 17 voices. They are the 17. This dream was in 2003. The dream was one of those lucid events where I could recall almost every detail, even minutes later, sitting on the edge of the bed. Maybe it was real, and I really did end up in a spaceship somewhere. Maybe it's not the first time it's happened. How would you know? When I was about 18, I remember being in the pub with my friends and arguing that our whole life could be part of a computer program. I actually said screensaver, but who remembers them? And that some kid in the year 3000 who's gone to the toilet will be back in a minute, move the mouse, or year 3000 equivalent, and everything would simply disappear. Or pause, or reset. The alien message was very clear. It was the grey that was important, the middle stuff, the average, the dull. This is what everything boils down to in the end, and what matters most. Not the fancy high-end achievements or the crushing failures. It all cancels out. I've spent most of my life as Scissorman, trying to think Scissorman, not going with Scissorman, being both spontaneous yet making meticulous life plans with my remaining years. I'm 53 now. Finite time to do an infinite number of things, but does any of it really matter? And am I actually in control of any of it? Grey, like my Drummond International grey paint. Not white, not black, bang in the middle. Average. Where everything ends up, it was meant to be. If I shine someone's shoes, does this mean that someone's shoes somewhere are now dirty to balance it out and bring it back to grey? If I make a bed, has another just broken? It's a wheel of life. We all start with nothing, gain stuff, then die. There's nothing you or I can do about it, no matter how much we kid ourselves. Many believe that certain numbers, especially prime numbers, have mystical qualities. I chose the name The 17 for a choir because of a dream, but the boffins at MIT say that 17 is the most common randomly chosen number between 1 and 20. I thought I was being random, but subconsciously have chosen a number that my Auntie Ethel could have chosen. Grey. The Beatles, I saw her standing there, was going to be called 17. An in-betweeny age between the sweet naivety of 16 and the grown womanhood of 18. Grey. William S. Burroughs and Robert Anton Wilson had a thing about the number 23, the so-called 23 enigma. Wilson pointed out the self-fulfilling nature of the enigma and how the mind has an ability to perceive patterns or even see the truth in nearly everything and anything. When you start looking for something, you tend to find it. Maybe we're all hardwired to look for meaning in everything, to explain and discover and understand. This is probably the root of both science and religion. Were the aliens the original agnostics? A belief of nothing yet everything? Grey. Is this the one universal truth? When I set the 17 in motion to sing the scores, it all seemed pretty random and a new way to do music. A prime number of singers, no melody, verse or chorus, singing in different age styles, mixing the sounds together. I said that I would like to start music all over again. I said that the choir of the 17 would struggle with the dark but respond to the light. I think I was wrong. I was fighting the idea of the grey. And grey was always going to win.